You're listening to Garden Designs with Robert Jennings, live and local, every Saturday morning from 8 to 9. Call or text Robert at 512-836-0590.
Great day to you out there, folks. How y'all doing? Boy, we got a cold one out there, don't we? I believe this is the one that we are warned about here during the last couple of weeks, the one we were warned about from the almanac was going to hit in January. Hopefully, last night was the pinnacle. Looks like it'll get down to 32 degrees here in a few days. And other than that, doesn't look to get that low again. Of course, that can change in a heartbeat here in Texas. But I think that was the pinnacle of cold last night was. So always look forward to that. I always love the days getting longer. The mornings are finally, the sun's coming up a little bit earlier now. Again, I mentioned previously how at the winter solstice that for 2 weeks, the days just get longer at the end. The sunset happens a later time, but yet the sunrises keep happening later and later. But now both of them are turning the same way in the sense of the days getting longer. So I always love that. I know that means we're not too far away from things greening. And I do see a lot of course, irises and things like that are greening already and have been just, I can't wait for the year. I really do not like cold weather or winter. And as much as I love flowers, of course, and I'm rebelling, I am wearing one of my 7 or 8 koi pond shirts, Hawaiian shirts today. Of course, albeit with a leather coat. But anyhow, enough of that. You've heard the telephone numbers there. Do call or text in. Lines are open. The number is 512-836-0590. Again, that's the number to call or text. And then if we're out of towners, toll-free, 877-590-5525. Also, of course, you can always find us streaming at newsradioklbj.com and on your iPhone and Google Play apps. You can always look at past shows, podcasts, if you like, by clicking on the phone app, clicking on More, then all shows, and then scroll down once, you'll see my show. Click on more information once again, and at the bottom will be a SoundCloud link to all the past shows. Well, as always, flying by the seats of my plants here, your color commentary here, the leadoff batter for the gardening shows, live and local. Some would say more than others. It's the Power of the Flower Hour, the King Hibiscus Flower Hour for both you flower and album music lovers. All righty then. Wanted to tell you a little bit about me before we start getting calls. Please do call in at any time. I'd rather talk about y'all than me. But I do have a garden design company. I'm more of a flower, perennial flower, shrub, and vine specialist. I definitely know what survives winter, having lived in colder climates. And I specialize my company, RJ Garden Designs, in coloring up people's yards, providing a 360-degree 3D panoramic view of color, bringing it to you as close as possible to your windows through guidelines, wires, trellises, shepherd hooks, lattices, whatever I can think of and get my hands on to bring you the color that you would like. And I can be reached at rjgardendesigns@gmail.com. And also, I have a professional ways, Facebook professional profile page site that you can go to, name the same RJ space garden space designs. And you can see some of my previous work. And also, I will put some information in there, some photos of flowers that I think are really interesting. And speaking of, you can go to that and see what I'm about to talk about. And that is, I mentioned this last year about this time, it's the coolest plant, and that's Bilbergeria Newtons. That's hard to say for me, excuse me. That's Bilbergeria Newtans, N-U-T-A-N-S. It's also called the Friendship Plant or Queen's Tear. This is not to be confused with the Friendship Plant of the Peace Lily or the Broom Closet Lily, so named because people, once it starts blooming, they put it in the closet and forget about it and open it up, and all of a sudden there's that big, pretty white lily flower that's growing again, hence the name. But this is also called the Friendship Plant, but it's the Queen's Tear Friendship Plant. And it is the prettiest darn-looking thing, and the best thing about this is that it's winter hardy, and it's currently blooming now. It is kind of monkey grass leaves in size and shape, but then it'll have these beautiful flower spears that come out that have curled tips of blue and green and yellow. It's just incredibly beautiful. If you don't go to my site, I encourage you to look at that. There's also a giant version of this, but it's not truly a bilbergia, but they call it the same, and it's a bromeliad bilbergia, and it is a tropical plant. It's a bromeliad, but the blooms are almost identical to the Newtans winter hardy version, except that they're about 10 inches big, a beautiful, beautifully structured flower, just absolutely gorgeous, has a lot of pink in it as well. And again, the Newtans version is just a smaller version that's only about three inches long, but it's really cool to see that, particularly at the time of the year where everything just, you know, looks so ugly out there. There's just no color. Except for those of y'all that may have greenhouses, I must say that after being in the greenhouse for 2 weeks, my plants, flowers, and butterflies galore are inside the greenhouse. A lot of, for example, what's blooming right now in there is yesterday, today, and tomorrow, that beautiful purple, lavender, and white flower that's out there, flowering maple. I love that. That is one of my favorite ornamental trees, the flowering maple. There's several versions of that, or abutilon tree, not abutilon shrub, but abutilon trees, A-B-U-T-I-L-O-N, if you want to look it up. A lot of those are in full bloom. A lot of hibiscus, a lot of bougainvillea, just all sorts of things are loving the heat. The lower, not too hot and not too cold is why it does so well in a greenhouse. And was shocked the other day when I came in there and just saw all sorts of butterflies. I hope they make it. And anyhow, I see that we're coming up here on our first break. Again, lines are open. Do call at 512-836-0590 and get the queue going, and we can answer questions when we get back from these commercials.
Welcome to Garden Designs with Robert Jennings on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text Robert with your questions at 512-836-0590.
Welcome back, folks. You heard the numbers there, 512-836-0590. Again, lines are still open. Toll free 877-590-5525. Continuing with mentioning what was coloring in the greenhouse, but what's still coloring outside, amazed by the beauty and the durability of shrimp plants. I've mentioned them several times before, but even after that brutal freezes that we've had here recently, I still have yellow shrimp blooming, still have the red shrimp blooming. These do get rather large. You can always contain them and cut them back, but they can easily get 8 to 9 feet across, just a beautiful flower structure as well as the colors in it. Each has its own intricacies and colors, and just a wonderfully versatile, very, very winter hardy plant. A very inexpensive way to color up a yard. If you can only afford to get a few plants, I highly recommend shrimp plants without a doubt. Wanted to mention just something I came across, and that is a lot of people have fungal problems or rust problems on plumeria and things of that sort. the leaves fall down, and subsequently it gets in the soil if you don't clean it up right, and then you have the same problem the next year. Well, there is a very good fungicide product that comes with cornmeal, and the trick of it is to put it in the ground in March, early April to kill the spores from the previous year. But the cornmeal part of it, and there's a brand of Natural Green is one manufacturer, and again, it's called Fungicide with Cornmeal. It's a liquid. And what's neat about it is that the cornmeal stimulates a beneficial type of fungus called Trichoderma, T-R-I-C-H-O-D-E-R-M-A. And this good fungus fights off the bad fungi. And so you could do that along, as well as also perhaps spraying some liquid garlic on there as well, and that will prevent a lot of your rust problems. I do see we have a caller here with Kathy. How could I help you there? What's going on?
Good morning, Robert. Yes, luckily I have a 22x42 greenhouse. My husband's a cottonseed breeder, so I have use of the greenhouse while his plants are gone. I'm having difficulty because when it got cold, every plant I could pull in there, I did. Now, I don't know whether my Dracaena, my lilies, irises, some of them look good and some of them look like, you move them over to the other side of the greenhouse, it's not so bright. I do have a fan that comes on it when it, I think it hits 76, it ramps up and takes the air out if I open the window correctly. And I just don't know what to do with the greenhouse. I mean, what kind of plants should I be bringing in to overwinter?
Well, I'm surprised you mentioned irises. Typically, those are winter hardy as can be and have no need really for a greenhouse. And they're, will be coloring up here within a couple of months, and even lilies as well. So those are winter hardy type of bulbs and rhizomes. But the types of things that typically you would overwinter, and I'm jealous of the size of your greenhouse, and my wife is probably very glad that I don't have one that size. But
well, it's for a specific purpose, but it helps when, you see your plants, and everything I have is in pots. We moved from the valley 20 years ago up here, and I have not put anything in the ground because I didn't want to take care of snakes. I wasn't into that. So everything I have is in pots.
Yes.
My Liriope is doing fine, and even my Dracaena that stayed out last year that got frozen and snowed in, they all came back. But I don't know, should I put less plants in there? Can I leave my irises in pots? That's the thing. Well, nothing's in the ground. They're all in pots.
How come we don't have anything in the ground? I mean, like the irises will do just fine in the ground.
Well, okay, so we're on a gravel hill. We do have some good topsoil in certain areas. But
oh.
I did it too long where when I have stuff in the ground, I'm in the valley. Hello, that was like all year.
Yes.
And but I didn't have snakes. There's too many snakes up here. So anything that's clumped or growing in, I don't do. So everything is in a pot. I just don't want to deal with weeding. This way I can take care of the weeds and the growth. And if I have to repot it or bring it down. But that's just what I did.
I got you.
I brought up a billion plants, and they were all in pots when I brought them up, and they stayed. After I saw the snakes, I just didn't want to have to deal with anything in the ground that I would have to go in and try to clean, because I would.
Well, that explains things a little bit clearer here. And the danger with pots is that, as far as leaving them out of the greenhouse, during the coldest part of the winter, is that the bulbs, the roots, they don't have the heat of the earth to keep them warm. And
mm-hmm.
So you still have to cover them up. So really, there's not that much that you can do as far as leaving out of your greenhouse.
But like my Dracaena in the greenhouse, I mean, they just are beginning to look really bad. I'm just very tempted to chunk them outside and leave them out because they're getting all faded, and it's just very disconcerting. But
well, that one particular species I'm not that familiar with. Is there a common name for that?
Dracaena?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Is that G-R-I-S?
It's that tricolor plant.
Oh.
That green and with the purple edges, and if it stays in the shade where I have so many trees, everything I have is shaded, which is okay. And so my Dracaena usually are very deep and green with purple. I don't like the orange and the other, but anyway, so my Dracaena is very colorful. But I just didn't know if there's a greenhouse protocol, you know, a different feeding schedule. Watch the watering and I put things in there. Half of the plants look good and half of them look kind of droopy. So,
well, there's also the time of the year, typically in the late fall and early winter, where things have peaked out and they just don't look that good. You know, we talked last week, I believe someone was talking about horsetail, how it looks really bad, but mm-hmm. the top half of it can be cut off and then it will brighten up as it doesn't get cold. But a lot of plants just, you know, they don't like it this time of year, and so they don't always look up perky and pretty for you, and it's just a matter of the seasons.
Well, I guess I'll just, when it comes time to take them out, I'll just, you know, cut them back and let them put on new growth like they did last year after I repotted them. It was great. I just, you know, it just seemed like I hear people talking about greenhouses and, you know, people just throw their plants in and leave them in there all winter. And I'm looking at, you know, all my hanging basket flowers. Oh, they're so beautiful. My husband had started some wild flowers in there, bless his heart. They're growing. I mean, they're just, I've got beautiful color in there, but I just, I'm just not used to having a greenhouse and what I should really do to keep the plants happy.
Well, you're lucky that it's so large that you can actually walk in there and see everything.
Yes.
Mine's so crowded that I can't even walk into it. I have to figure out how to spray every corner going low and high.
Well, my hibiscus are in my sunroom.
I was about to ask you about what types of hibiscus do you have?
I'm one of these people that I get a plant and it starts to go bad, then I take cuttings and I make cuttings, and I can't have a sick plant. Somebody has a bad plant, I take it and I rejuvenate it.
It sounds like you have plumeria-itis. Do you know what plumeria-itis is?
No.
That is where you keep breaking the branches of plumeria because it gets so tall, and then all of a sudden you don't have 5 or 6, you have 70, and then you have to put them in your garage, and it's a disease. I'm just joking with plumeria lovers, but they know exactly what I'm talking about. You either have 3 or 4 plumeria, or you have 70. There's no in-between. I do encourage you to get some other things in the ground, though, that are airy and not so clumpy for snakes to hide in, stuff like hibiscus mallow.
Welcome to Garden Designs with Robert Jennings on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text Robert with your questions at 512-836-0590.
All right, folks, welcome back. You heard the numbers there, 512-836-0590. Let's get back to Kathy there. And Kathy, I realize that you're afraid of snakes and the like and don't want them having shrubs or things where they can hide in, but I just hate for you to always have to have everything that could be in the ground in pots.
I'm afraid of them is just, you know, having to find them and then taking care of it. I understand, but to let you probably get on to your other listeners, I just wanted to know whether, you know, trying to keep the greenhouse at a, you know, minimum 70, and, you know, should I be feeding them more? And
well,
is it okay for these plants to be in there starting to look drab and leave them in there until it's time to take them out?
Well, I don't think you should be keeping it that warm, just the energy cost alone, and typically things do need to get a little bit dormant and have a breather there, so I would lower the temperature quite a bit. I would definitely not water as much, of course,
Right.
That could be a problem, and you should not be really fertilizing at all.
Okay.
Are you fertilizing?
No.
Okay.
No.
I would encourage you to start finding plants that you can put into the ground that are, airy or stalky, to where you don't really, there's no place for something to hide, and the cleanup's not that difficult either. Are you familiar with hibiscus mallows or Texas hibiscus stars?
I don't know. I just buy my hibiscus at Earthworks in Victoria.
Well, there's a lot of different hibiscus, and what you're referring to are tropical hibiscus, you know, the single blossom, the double blossom, the yellows and the oranges and the reds and the tricolors,
yes,
and all of that. But there's a whole other, several other species of hibiscus that are actually winter hardy. And one is hibiscus mallow. It's also called disco or bell. And those are the ones that literally, you probably know what I'm talking about or seen it, to where the flower is about 8 to 10 inches wide.
Yes.
And there's burgundy ones, there's red ones, there's white ones. They now have hybrids of pink-white swirls and just really cool designs. They have ones with just a full circle pattern or five curved petal leaves and the like.
How beautiful.
And the pink one is just stunning. Sometimes you can have 30 blossoms on it at one time. And again, we're talking 5, 6, 7 inches. I mean, 8 inches, 9 inches big. And it just dies. Full sun. But they're very adaptable. They'll still bloom with part sun. But they die back in the winter, kind of like a Pride of Barbados, how it becomes just a little stick that you can break off. It's just like that.
Okay.
So I would encourage you to put that into some of the ground, and it will do well in poor soil. And even some airy ornamental things, such as a desert willow. There's the famous Texas star hibiscus. That's the one that has star-shaped flowers. Typically, it's red, and the plant leaves looks like marijuana, actually, the leaf structure. But it is very beautiful. And also comes in other colors. Most people are only aware of the red one, but there's a pink one and there's a white one as well. And just, again, very stalky, so nothing can really hide in it. And also maybe you can find some multi-trunk ornamental trees, as I mentioned, such as the desert willow or perhaps abutilon trees. And as far as the rest of your greenhouse, you know, it's just that time of the year. Nothing's going to look that great in the middle of winter.
Okay. And I just really have not done it before, you know, really got into putting all my plants in there. And so I just really needed to know. I kind of figured they would need a resting time. But, you know, when you see something so pretty and flowery, you just want to keep it going.
Oh, I understand that. No doubt about that, particularly having color when everything is so drab out there.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I like to listen to you, and so you just have a rest of a good weekend.
All right. Well, you too, Kathy. Thanks for calling in. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, folks. I guess moving on here, lines are open, answering some text as well as I'm going here. And a little bit of stack of stuff and tips and things. And this time of the year, luckily we haven't had any ice or problems, but I really saw a very cool anti-snow chains for a car. And it's not the typical chains that you're thinking of, which I've been skiing enough in my life, snow skiing, to know how hard they are to put on and the like. But there's a very cool, how can I describe it? It's like zip ties, cable ties, very long ones. And they actually just go through the hubcap and around the wheel. They're like 15, 20 inches long. And you wrap it through the hubcap and on the outside of the wheel and then tie it together. And you put about 8 of these around the wheel. And it acts just like a chain. And it is a very, very cool way to, if you get surprised, you could always have these in your trunk and ready to go. If you ever had a problem and had to do something, had to drive, you can buy these in advance, and it looks like it's very easy to put on. Looks like the only disadvantage is that you might have to cut off. I don't know if they're reusable, but it is. It's called reusable anti-snow chains of car. Look that up, and I believe you can find that at www.everydayforthenumber4saleus.net/products/reusable-anti-snow-chains-of-car-1. Thought that was very ingenious, and I know that we really had a problem last year. A lot of people couldn't visit loved ones. They couldn't get up hills. They couldn't go anywhere. And we just aren't the type here in Texas to have chains or even think about putting chains on tires because it just doesn't happen enough. But this is something that can work in a flash, and encourage you to get some in case we do get snowed in or iced in, I should say, again. Do see someone about to get on the line here, but we're coming up on the break, so I'm going to hold off on that until after this last commercial break. In the meantime, here, have about a minute. I wanted to mention a flower here, flower of the week, I guess you could call it, for a segment. And I'm not much of an annual person. I just want to buy something once. I don't want to buy it again, even though you get annuals a lot of times, particularly if you have a greenhouse to last several years. But this one really caught my eye because it looked like a combination of, I don't know how to describe this, a geranium and a kalanchoe. If you know what a kalanchoe is, lots of different colors there, and then the geranium leaves. It's just really remarkable. It's called a Primula vulgaris, and it's just new to me. Maybe y'all seen it before, but just really neat. Full sun. It's an early spring flowering container plant, and comes in red, yellow, white, pink, lavender. And again, that's Primula, Primula vulgaris, Vulgaris. I saw it at a box store the other day and said, what on earth is that? Because it looked like a geranium, but it wasn't. And again, it had that kalanchoe type of flower structure to it rather than a geranium flower, but the leaves itself looks very much like a geranium and just really caught my eye. All right, well, I do see we are here at the last break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome to Garden Designs with Robert Jennings on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text Robert with your questions at 512-836-0590.
Welcome back, folks. The lines are open at 512-836-0590. Toll free 877-590-5525. And a couple of people were asking again about that Bill Bergia Newton's, just to spell it and to recognize it or to be able to have time to write it down. That's Bill Bergia, B-I-L-L-B-E-R-G-I-A, Newtons, N-U-T-A-N-S. And that is the winter hardy small version of the Queen's Tear. Just absolutely gorgeous flower without a doubt. I'm going to tease y'all a little bit. I always tell you about my love of cats and a stack of stuff and tips and things, finishing that out. And I told you about that cat Christmas pamphlet that I bought at the grocery store the other day. I was looking at the most famous cats in history. And, one cat I was reading here was on board the German battleship Bismarck, the largest battleship ever, which was finally sunk after a long ordeal. We finally heard it's a rudder there, and it could only go in circles, so we're finally able to knock it out. But on there was a cat that survived it and got into the hands of the British Navy, and it was then adopted by the HMS Cossack. And if that sank, and it later survived that ordeal as well, and the name of that cat was the Unsinkable Sam, and we all know about the 9 lives that cats have, so maybe that's where they got that. A couple other ones here that I thought was pretty neat was what cat that lived at this Rider's Key West home, now a museum. It's a famous Nobel Prize winners. He had a polydactyl pet cat, polydactyl means that the cat has actually more than just five toes or whatever on their paws. They have six or seven. And that particular one was from Ernest Hemingway. There was also a U.S. president, the first of four from Illinois, who once fed his pet tabby from the table using official White House cutlery. And who would that be? That would be Abraham Lincoln. And then perhaps the most famous gorilla ever, which celebrated adapted a pet cat that it named All Bald. You know, this was the gorilla that could actually use sign language or use a little bitty crude computer to communicate, and kept naming it All Ball because of its shape when it was all curled up, and that was the famous ape gorilla, Coco. Well, enough of that. I do have a few minutes here left in the show. There's no text right now that I can answer or call, and I guess I will move on to continuing the tour de color of some of the beds that I have at my house. I've probably done about 15 of these, and this I want to describe is on the north side of my house. So as far as lighting and positioning, this is on the north side of the house, perimeter bed. And so starting with that, I probably won't even be able to finish it. There's so many things in here. But again, I put a lot of bulbs both in the back and in the front. So on the back side, there's different colored, primary colored gladiolas every 18 inches. And then on the other side, the front side of the border, there's allium, mascara, and crocus, and hyacinth. And then in the bed itself, most of the beds that I design are typically 3 feet wide as far as perimeter beds. And on the left side, starting out, the greenhouse is further to the left of this, but the left side of this bed, the beginning of it, I have a variegated leafed red hibiscus, the one that has the prolonged stamen that sticks out about 4 inches, of a different looking hibiscus structure, but it's the variegated leaf one. And the trick to those, you don't really want to fertilize that; those are, otherwise they use the variegation. And then also the Maypop incense, the purple passion flower vine, and then a white plumbago, and then a yellow plumeria, and then a flame bougainvillea tree, and then a blue plumbago, and then a rainbow plumeria, which I put a whole bunch of different breaks from other plumeria. It's a pink, red, and yellow, and white all together. They're volunteers that grow up, and the name for that is rainbow plumeria when you combine things such as different colors. And then also a beautiful giant double-blossom orange hibiscus tree, one of my favorite flowers. It's about 10 years old, just incredibly gorgeous. And then a sunset double-blossom tropical hibiscus, and then a giant pink Alice DuPont mandevilla growing across multiple windows in both directions through guidelines or wires that go across the windows. Then a yellow mandevilla growing up an arch that goes to the other side of a stepping stone that you walk through, and the continuation of the bed is a whole bunch of invisible trellises. And on the invisible trellises and in the arch itself before the individual trellises is a white star jasmine, and as well as the continuation of the pink Alice DuPont mandevilla and the yellow mandevilla. And then a purple-white honeysuckle vine, and then a scarlet mandevilla, and then a bleeding heart variegated white-red flowering vine, then a maroon mandevilla, then a giant red mandevilla, and then a regular-sized pink mandevilla, and then a giant white mandevilla, and a magenta mandevilla, and then a maroon clematis, and an orange Mexican flame vine. That's the only one that's not winter hardy, by the way, in the Alice DuPont mandevilla and the yellow mandevilla. Those are the only ones that aren't winter hardy. And then also a continuation of the yellow mandevilla for the other side of the arch. Then a variegated leaf orange bougainvillea in a hanging basket, as well as another hanging basket, a orange chrysandra. That's an annual, but it lives for several years, even more if you have a greenhouse. And then in the ground below that, a schoolhouse lily and peppermint amaryllis, red amaryllis. And then the black and boom blue salvia. This is the most favorite of all the flowers I have, the most favorite of hummingbirds. It's about 4.5 feet tall, not the smaller version. And then also the taller, 6 foot tall, black and boom purple salvia. I could go on here a little bit more. I do hear the music, maybe finish that up next week. But color is the word here, and I can do that for you if you'd like. I can be reached at rjgardendesigns@gmail.com. Y'all have a wonderful week. See y'all next time.